Today I want to talk about this idea. If there is something you are not, it is because of dot, dot, dot. And it's that because of that I'd like to explore in this talk. Now, there are lots of things that we are not, and I would say we're usually pretty happy that that's true. We're not skunks, we're not fire hydrants, we're not the tires on our cars, and we're not the litter on highways. You go, okay, you get the picture. Your individuality is different than the individuality of every other thing. However, there are certain characteristics, talents, skills, and conditions that are not yours, and they're not you, but you'd like them to be. Why are they not you? If you want something to be part of you, be part of your individuality, but it is not, why is that? And after the whys are discovered, what can we do about it? In the work that I do, healing coaching, or I could call it spiritual coaching, concepts like mindfulness, stress, integration, and many other words are bandied around. I like the words whole, W-H-O-L-E, and healing. I was in a lecture by Deepak Chopra years ago, and he said that those two words have the same Sanskrit word. They both originate from the same root, whole and healing. I like that. That made sense to me. Let's suppose that to be healed or healthy, or we have to be whole. And maybe we could flip that, look at the reverse, and say that this is valid too. To be unhealthy or unhealed, a person would need to be unwhole. I like the words fragmented and fractured to describe this unwhole condition. Maybe there are many others that would fit, but I happen to like those two. My supposition is this idea, that an energy exchange experience of shocking suddenness and intensity damage the structure of our identity. Let me say that again more clearly. That shocking suddenness that is we didn't expect to be interacted with that way, and it caught us by surprise, and the intensity was way more than we expected. Instead of just a word or two, it was like being clubbed or hit by lightning or something. That kind of energy exchange can damage our identity. That would be, I don't know, if you can imagine a piece of glass hitting that glass object with a hammer, or taking that glass object and either dropping it or throwing it onto a hard floor. Like, whoa. It's likely that all human beings have experienced that kind of shock or overwhelm or domination by outside energies, people or circumstances, maybe naturally occurring, that damaged how we saw ourselves. From that event on, this person who is seeing things, our view now of ourselves and life and everything else is going to be different. When we start seeing ourselves as something different than we did a minute ago before that traumatic energy exchange experience, now we're viewing from this place that is more vulnerable, damaged, hurting, frightened, stressed, less wholesome, less empowered, less loving. It seems inevitable that human beings do this. We will try to assign cause. We'll try to understand what happened in our experience. What did it? And we establish rules that way. So maybe the rule we'll use the next time some circumstance is similar to the one we experienced, well, we'll apply that rule. You know, don't put your hand on a hot stove. That's a good rule. That's a good rule. Now, we could be told that rule, but those of us who have had that experience really get the rule. It's like, okay, I got it. But when we try to assign cause, oftentimes we're really assigning blame or responsibility for it. And when we do that, I think this is inevitable. Even with really, really young children, we're going to assign blame to ourselves, even though we're completely innocent in it. We just happen to be in the environment of something that went awry. Somebody, I'll say, malfunctioned mentally, emotionally, or physically, and standing there, we became the lightning rod. And we blame other people for doing what they did. And we blame ourselves for being there. We blame ourselves for causing, even if that's not true, the other person to behave that way. And we go on with this blame or assigning responsibility. How about God? Why did God let this happen? Within the last year, I heard somebody say that their dog bit their daughter. I have a sense that the daughter was taunting the dog, and the dog reacted to that and bit her. And this guy said in anguish, why did God let that happen to my daughter? Like, well, if you assign blame to God for those kind of occurrences, that's going to end up being a problem. But if we go back to us and away from God for a moment, I think the problem is when we interpret this experience that one of us doesn't blame, that's you, the one you, doesn't blame you, and that would be the end of the story. I think really what happens is the one of us, that part of you, that part of me, we blame a part of us. Like, oh, I know I'm a good guy, I did a bad thing, so there's obviously a good part of me and a bad part of me. You did a good thing and you did a bad thing. Oh, that's pretty obvious. There's a good part of you and there's a bad part of you. And religious authorities often speak to this. You got to keep that bad part of you under control. That part of you, that's all, right? And now all of a sudden, instead of us being whole, one part, one unit, we at least have two. Good part, bad part. Uh-oh. That, to me, is the fragmentation process. There is me, and there is this blameworthy, bad part of me that caused this problem, that caused this pain, maybe for other people, maybe for me, maybe for both of us. Depending on our upbringing, there's going to be a greater volume and or a lesser volume of energy exchange experiences that fractured our identity. If every energy pattern coming to us was gentle and loving and respectful, and we grew and learned from that, wouldn't that be just great? But the next person I talked to that had that experience will be the first person. Most of us have these painful events, and they keep occurring. And as they do, we become more and more fragmented. So we may have been a good part, bad part, and then it's more refined. We have many bad parts, maybe many good parts, and we keep breaking and breaking and separating and breaking, disowning, denying all these parts that we think are bad. If we were to back up and look at our current conditions in our lives, and we like notice, maybe I'll identify it as not wholeness, then maybe we can go further in our exploration to see what's going on here, the why, and how to overcome it, how to change it, so we can experience healing and wholeness. In this process of examining our lives for wholeness or not wholeness, I like to use the 12 worlds as a framework. I find it to be logical, reasonable, and relatively easy way to look at ourselves and our activities. Just by looking at our current states, our current conditions, and each of those 12 worlds, and then identifying for our own selves, using our imagination, what an ideal state, what an ideal condition would be in each of those 12, we might be able to discover something we are not. There's a discrepancy between what we're currently experiencing and what we'd like to experience. Those 12 worlds are spiritual, and I start from the top down in my own mind so it's easier to remember. Above my head, spiritual, mental, emotional, physical. Family, career, financial, social, leisure, community, political, and maintenance. You go, Yeah, we look at any one of those 12 worlds. You can determine what at any one moment which world seems to be the area that is most disturbing of your peace, maybe has the most turmoil, most insufficiency, most upset. And you go, yeah, let me look for insufficiencies or imbalances, or ideally, satisfaction in each of those. You go, I'm satisfied. In the cases where we find that we are not something that we really want to be, I think we're going to find fragments of our identity that have been created by these harsh, painful, sudden, shocking energy exchange experiences that we've had. If we can imagine that in different contexts, we have different identities that we present, we have different faces. Oh, why are you making that face? That kind of thing. We present our faces depending on context. That makes perfect sense. Here's an example. You might be able to reconcile this idea. A tough business negotiator and a doting mother or doting father. It's like, oh, that's the same person? Wow. Those are two dramatically different faces. Yeah, And we present these faces more or less appropriately, depending on how reactive we are to the situations we find ourselves in. Every once in a while, you see somebody flying off the handle, and you go, wow, that seems inappropriate. Something affected them. They processed it through one of their more sensitive faces and reacted that way. Unbeknownst to us, we go like, yikes, that seems weird. That looked like a tantrum. I didn't understand that. And it is when we process through these faces or facets or these worlds, we're going to see different things. I could flip that example that I just gave you and imagine this. These two faces, a doting boss. He or she is really thoughtful to all the people at work, really caring, just, oh, everybody loves this person. But at home, tyrannical. There are people I know who fit that pattern. And when the people at work talk about him, oh, he was just so wonderful, he's so wonderful, he's so wonderful. And at home, he was incredibly abusive to his wife and children. It's like, are you talking about the same person that they live with? And the answer was, yeah. So we do this presentation of faces, depending on context, in order to get our own needs met. As we develop during our early years, we acquire energy. There's no surprise there. We acquire energy in order to grow. A fertilized ovum, if it doesn't acquire energy, won't be much growth going on. So you go, oh, yeah. So these energy exchange experiences that go on before we're come out of the womb and at birth and for the rest of our lives are absolutely necessary if we're going to live. If we're not going to live, then we can stop having these energy exchange experiences. And frankly, I think you can see a pattern there. When people stop exchanging energy, they start going downhill and they become less lively, less enlivened. Wouldn't it be great if each challenge that you or I faced, we were like, oh, okay, wait a minute. This is a little more difficult than the energy I currently have, so I need to acquire more energy in order to meet this challenge. So I'm going to reach out for that energy. I'm going to draw in this information. I'm going to draw in this knowledge, this help, this support, the resources necessary for me to meet these needs. And then I'll do that for the next challenge and the next challenge. That would be great. But sometimes it doesn't happen that way. Sometimes the energy exchange with us hurt us. They overwhelm us. They dominate us. They squash us. They make us feel diminished. They make us feel less than we felt before. when you look back, you can say, oh, you know what? Those experiences were due to the combination of how reactive others were, how malfunctioning they were processing information, and maybe how sensitive we were to their energy exchanges. And when we have harsh energy exchanges with people who we think should be caring and gentle and loving and kind to us, but they're not, they can hurt even more. I play around with this idea of how to represent the 12 worlds. Sometimes I just make a list of them and various aspects underneath them of the items within that world. You know, in an Excel spreadsheet, the lists become pretty long. And sometimes I draw a 12-sided polygon on a piece of paper so it's two-dimensional, and I label each side as being one of the worlds. Yeah, that's cool. But I've been playing around now with, in my own imagination, and I find it on the Internet, with a three-dimensional, 12-sided polygon, 12-sided or 12-faced. And I can use that to represent a person. That sphere with the 12 faces is called a dodecahedron. Dodecahedron. And it's cool. And when you start reading about that in Wikipedia or elsewhere, what's cool to me is some of the greatest thinkers from ancient times as well as relatively recent times have wondered whether the universe is actually a dodecahedron. It's like, I'm like, wow, that's interesting. So let's consider each of these 12 sides to be a face. If I have had bad experiences by presenting a face, and in reaction to that, I had a shocking experience of abuse while I was presenting, it's likely that in the future, I'm going to either hide this face, which you can interpret as a form of flight, or if I do present that face, and I'm willing to present that face, I can often do it aggressively, which is essentially the idea of fight. I'm going to put that face out there, I dare you, I dare you. And people go around and we say that, oh, that person's got a chip on their shoulder. To me, that is an attitude that has been copped in order to deal with the pain of having one of their faces, quotes, faces, hurt by an energy exchange experience in the past. Like, It would be nice, and that's the whole purpose of everything here that we talk about, healing, the healing spirit, is to be able to heal the hurt that we would have experienced through our faces. I think there's another bit of good news is that we're blessed with way more than 12 faces. May use this dodecahedron as an example, but inside of each of these 12 faces got to be way more than just one face. It's got to be many, many faces. So if you thought of a beautifully cut diamond with an amazing number of facets, you'd go, oh, yeah. You and I are those diamonds. We're three-dimensional, or obviously we're more than that, obviously I say, but we have way more facets than those few. It goes on and on and on. But I do believe that we become brighter and sharper. And this pressure that we experience, like a diamond, would have caused us to become more and more aware, brighter, sharper, and more valuable to ourselves, our families, and other people. Let's consider some of the other reasons why we might not be something we wanted. There are probably, I think, when it comes down to analyzing stuff like this, I feel like there's only a small number of reasons. There's a finite number of reasons for pretty much anything. We can make it really, really elaborate, but I think in the end it's going to be a relatively small number. So I brainstormed with myself to create a list. And this is what I came up with. a half a dozen ideas. We are not, fill in the blank, we are not because we don't have permission to be. We don't have permission. We are not, fill in the blank, because we don't deserve to. We have a belief about that. We are not, fill in the blank, because we are afraid to extend our energies and reach for what we want. We are not because there are stanzas of qualities that we imagine, and we imagine, we feel, we can't achieve or meet those standards. So, we don't. We are not, fill in the blank, because we deny the parts of us that want what they want, and we are not operating with all cylinders. We're not running on all cylinders. Why? Because we're not whole. We only have part of us. You've heard this thing. That person's trying to do something with one hand tied behind his back. Oh, that person's his own worst enemy. I think that's the problem with being unwhole. And the sixth idea was, we are not, fill in the blank, because our beliefs make us feel not enough. Capital N, capital E. When not enough, we're underpowered. So it's like, when just the opposite of that ever-ready battery we see on the TV, it doesn't keep going, it's stopping. Boom. There might be more than six items, right? Could be a gazillion, but those are the ones that came to mind. When I looked at them, I said, I wonder if there's a pattern there. Is there a theme? Is there something underlying that unifies all of those things? And the thought that popped into my mind was, yep, lack of awareness. Lack of awareness. If we could elevate our awareness, we wouldn't be hindered by any one of those imagined obstacles. I thought, that's kind of cool. Right or wrong is a common way to judge actions, right? Oh, that was wrong. Ah, that was right. If the actions produce waves of, say, high vibration energy, we're like, oh, we usually are going to see that as doing the right thing. We also judge it as good. Oh, that's good. Oh, that was good. However, when our actions or inactions, that's a form of action, holding back, produce waves of lower vibrations, which are generally not desired, those actions are likely to be judged wrong. Oh, that was wrong. That was bad. I imagine that when we determine the faces we want to hide or the faces we aggressively tend to present, we're going to discover the wrong, bad conclusions about the energy exchange experiences in our past that we had. Those energy exchange experiences of bad and wrong are going to come to the surface and we go, oh, this is why I do or don't do. This is why I don't or I do B. This is why I do or don't have. There's pain. There's pain in wrong and bad. They're dangers to survival. That's the whole point. If you do something wrong, oops, what did he do wrong? He walked out of the cave without checking, without taking his club when he heard that growl. That was wrong. Yeah, he became a menu item. Uh-oh, don't do that. That's wrong. That's bad. Wrong and bad are dangers to our connections and to our security, to belonging or love. If we feel we could lose energy, we could lose all of that stuff, that's what we're trying to hold on to. Hold on to this energy that keeps our individuality intact, keeps our identity, keeps us alive. And when we're in a group that is a welcoming group, a loving family, a loving community, we're more alive because we're exchanging more energy than if we're under attack at home, in our family of origin, with the people in our environments, anywhere else. Like, oh, I'm defended. I'm trying to hold on to what I have. I'm not trying to exchange energy. I'm trying to prevent those harsh exchanges of energy. We're less alive. Fear of pain and fear of loss are, to me, what explain to a large extent why there is something we are not. Fear seems to be that main reason that we're not something we want to be or do or have. Fear. But isn't fear just a result of our imagined pain? If we couldn't imagine pain, we'd put our hand on the stove. We wouldn't be afraid of putting our hand on the stove. Oh, you did that yesterday. Aren't you afraid? No. No. Can't you imagine the pain if you put your hand on the stove today the way you did yesterday? No, I can't imagine it. Boom, hand on stove again. Ow! Next day, same story. It's that, No, I got it. I can imagine the pain of doing that. I'm not doing that. You watch somebody hit their thumb with a hammer, you pretty much can get that message. Ooh, I can imagine it. I got the image of the pain that would be caused by hitting a thumb with a hammer. I don't need to actually hit my own thumb. That image of so-and-so doing it is adequate, more than adequate. Thank you. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah. Said another word away, if we imagine pain, we're going to have fear. We have to. It's designed to keep us safe. Like, So if you're in fear, it's like, yep. I'm imagining pain of what? And that is really the crux of changing everything. If we could hold on to our mental, emotional space, right? Just, I got all these things going on, thoughts and fears and things going on, but I'm going to just stay here long enough to examine my imagined, anticipated pain. And if we do that, we can draw more awareness to us. Like, I'm just going to quietly observe this. I'm going to quietly observe this. And as we do, we're going to draw more awareness to us and the situation. And it is the light, L-I-G-H-T, lowercase l, uppercase l, of that awareness that is going to set us free. That's what we need to draw in. More light. Oh, I'm seeing this more clearly. Oh, yeah, it's not so ambiguous. It's not so nonspecific. It's really, really clear to me. And its power will diminish. Its power to scare us or control us will diminish. It does take a little bit of courage, and it does take a little bit of trust to be able to examine images and beliefs that disturb our peace and that tend to trigger fear. But if we can hold that mental, emotional space, and if we can draw in courage, if we can draw in trust enough to try it, I think this is really where true healing begins. Anything that used to disturb our peace, if we can draw in more light as we observe this quietly, no need to change it, no need to fight it, no need to run away from it, just quietly observe it. Awareness makes everything different and less threatening. The parts that were fragmented, all these multiple pieces of energy of us that are floating around and maybe give rise to us being somewhat incoherent at times. It's like, if I could draw all of these in, if I could draw all of these back to me so I am whole, that'd be a whole different experience. I would love that. How can I do it? With love. Love will draw that back. Love and light will draw that back. Awareness and peace will draw that back. And the release of these darker beliefs and these fear-based, survival-oriented, limbic brain parts of us that are all about survival, primitive man, primitive woman, as lights shine on them, they'll be dissolved. Their influence over us will be reduced. If there is something you are not, it is because you have not yet aligned vibrationally with being it, doing it, or having it. We come from the source of everything, capital S, capital E. We come from the source of everything, which you go, that means everything is accessible to me. I come from the source of everything. I'm in with everything. I'm connected to everything. Everything is accessible to me. We can love it into our presence by shining the light of awareness on it. If we have courage and trust enough to do that, it is going to happen. I think that's the part of prayer. That's the part of energy modalities. That's the part of meditation. That is what there really is. We let go of resistance. We let go of rejection. We let go of this, I got to protect myself from my anticipated, imagined creation of fear and pain. And now we can allow that to come to us naturally for our own well-being. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.